From Buck's studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call is 1-800-462-7413. And, of course, along with your call, some topics to talk about, Zorba?
Yes, we're talking about Minnesota, an idea that Minnesota should pass a law like California, which actually looks at doctors, targets doctors who are anti-immunization and says, wait a minute, this is not good medical practice. And I certainly agree with some of those concepts. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about turning vacant lots, eyesores, into spaces, green spaces, that would be eye delight, eye candy, what that does for us and our society.
And our recipe?
Savory bean and spinach soup. I happen to love all different kinds of soups. This is a soup that uses beans, which means it's high protein. It uses spinach, which means it uses a Popeye, the Popeye food, which makes you stronger. And it tastes delicious.
Coming up, right now to the phones we go, Zorba, at 800-462-7413, 1-800-462-7413. Welcoming our first caller now, a listener in Ogden, Utah. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
I have a question for you. It's beautiful right here in Ogden. We get lots of sunshine, but I've just recently moved here, and I'm from a state that doesn't get much sunshine.
That's very funny. There are many states in the United States that do not get a lot of sunshine, many of them in places that are not desert-like. Mm-hmm. So that's probably part of it. Where'd you move from?
I moved from the Carolinas.
The Carolinas, yeah. So there's not much sunshine in the Carolinas.
It's light. It's light outside. It's like somebody flipped the switch on. It's light, mm-hmm. but there's not a whole lot of sunshine.
Uh-huh. So it's light without sunshine. Got you.
Yeah. So my question is, I'm a sunshine person. So when there's not a whole lot of sunshine, I have a tendency to kind of get depressed.
Sure.
So I'm wondering if people that are living in states like that, or even in, we've got a couple states that are dark half the time and light half the time.
Sure. Why'd you move to Utah for the sun?
I have family here.
Family there. You bring up some good points. There is something called seasonal affective disorder. It affects us more in the winter than it does in the summer. And that's when basically we've got, instead of having 12 or 16 hours of sunlight, we have 8 hours of sunlight, and we have 12 to 16 hours of darkness. And it does affect people. Some people just get sort of the winter blahs where they don't feel like doing anything, and they don't do very much at all. And some people have frank depression, and it's a significant issue. I had a woman in my practice years ago, wonderful woman, philanthropist when she died, teacher, never married, left everything to charity upon her death, and she had seasonal affective disorder. And every year she'd come in, we'd discuss it, put on an antidepressant around October. Usually it started bothering her. We'd start like the 1st of October, and she would stay on the medication until the beginning of February, March. Then she'd go off of it, and she'd feel better. She found that really helped her quite a lot. And you're right about that. But there's another concept which is quite interesting, the idea that people in warmer, sunnier climates are happier than people in other climates. And when you actually do research on this to find out what happiness is, however you can measure happiness, it turns out that when you move to a cloudy climate, to a climate, we'll say like Utah, California, where there's lots of sun, for the first year or two, maybe something like that, you're happier because you go, it's warm outside, sunny outside, I can do everything I want to. And then you go back to your baseline. So if you're an unhappy person, you become just as unhappy as you were before, and you complain about the traffic or the dryness in the air or the lack of something else.
Well, Zorba, you use one of those lights, don't you?
I use the seasonal affective disorder light. I use that. I use that in the wintertime. I usually start probably around Halloween, like a week or two before Halloween. I use it for about a month or six
weeks.
So where
do you find one of those?
If you go to Amazon.com and you Google SAD light, SAD light, it might be called seasonal affective disorder, but basically that's the acronym, SAD light. The one that I actually use, I think, is called Euphoria. or light phoria. It's not called euphoria. It's called light phoria. It's about $60. It's small. It uses LED lights. I like it because it's small. It has to have 10,000 lumens. That's what it has to do, and that's a way of that's the amount of wavelength of light, not the wavelength of light, but how much light there actually is. And I use it for about 20 minutes. It comes with a little timer right on it. I use it for 20 to 30 minutes in the morning when I'm looking at my email and having my coffee, and I have found that quite useful, the SAD light. Some people like a bigger light that has 10,000 lumens. I like the smaller, brighter light, but that's what I would do. Make sure it's LED crystal because otherwise the lights are too hot. So enjoy your lights.
Thanks so much to the caller as we move along at 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, cracking down on doctors who are
anti-vaccination. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about this. Tom, what are the states that have the highest vaccination rates in the country? The answer is
Wisconsin.
No. It's not Wisconsin. It's not Minnesota.
Oh, it's close.
Mississippi and West Virginia.
Really?
Mississippi and West Virginia, because those health authorities said there is no excuse for not vaccinating your child except a medical excuse that they have a medical problem, such as they have an autoimmune problem and so on. Otherwise, your kid can't go to school. Period. That's it. Don't immunize your kid, can't go to school. So they have the highest immunization rates. The rates that tend to have the lowest are the squeaky, clean, progressive, intelligent Northwest, you know, Oregon, Washington, and California, where the anti-immunization myth is spread far and wide, and Minnesota is part of it. And it's an anathema. The guy in England, his name slips my mind, who wrote an anti-immunization book, has since been discredited. His license has been taken away. He makes $10,000 to $20,000 a lecture. He tried to prove that it caused autism. It was wrong. What we found out when people don't immunize, you have a robust bump in measles and other problems, childhood diseases. And people don't realize how bad these are. And they have this goofy, crazy idea that they give an immunization to their child and their child's actually going to get some of the immunization. And that is not the case.
I thought that this had changed and now doctors were pretty much in...
pretty much is true, but not all. And so there is a guy in California whose license hasn't been totally rescinded, but the medical licensing board, in their intelligence, said you are engaging in something akin to malpractice, and you have to have another doctor, whatever that means, monitor what you're doing, or we're going to take away your license. And Minnesota is thinking about passing a law that's very, very similar. And the fact is, we should rein in doctors who give incorrect pseudoscientific information on immunizations. And we can narrow it to immunizations. Immunizations, I used to be kind of on the borderline with immunizations. I used to say to parents, well, if you don't want to immunize for this, you don't have to do it. I think polio is important. I think tetanus is important. I've changed my mind completely because I've read the research and I was lackadaisical 25 years ago. I am no longer lackadaisical. Immunizations have changed lives. I have not seen a case of meningitis in 25 years. I used to see meningitis once a year or so. We now have a meningitis vaccine. We now have vaccines against measles. We don't see measles. We don't see German measles, which is rubella. We don't see chickenpox. These childhood immunizations are a critical key for the health of our children. And the doctors who are going around giving pseudoscience is a bunch of bull, and they should be reprimanded. Now, if you're not a doctor and you want to say something, hey, you should say what you want to.
Yeah.
But doctors have the cloak of authority. They have the cloak of science. You can trust doctors. You can believe them. So if they say something as goofy as immunizations are bad for you, they are now engaging in non-scientific practice, and they should be reprimanded because they're using the cloak of science to go against science.
Yeah, I wonder, you say most doctors, almost all the doctors are pro-immunization.
Well, I would say it's probably up to 98%, maybe 96%.
I wonder what the lobby is that keeps all states from having this
Well, you think this is the dark – oh, you mean the lobby that keeps from passing a law like that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you could figure out why legislators do something or don't do something, you would have the talisman. You would have the key. You would have King Arthur's sword. You know, who can figure out what legislators do? This is a health show. This is not a political show. I don't gather to figure out what they do. Their heads are in the clouds. What they should do, the legislators don't have to do this. It can be the medical licensing boards. They have the authority to actually say, you are engaging in anti-immunizations rhetoric, and they can begin to harass them. They can begin to go after doctors and say, hey, you're publishing material that are anti-immunizations. You have a medical license. We believe that this may be malpractice. We want you to come and talk to us. They can harass doctors. They have the ability to do it. Why don't they do that? I don't know. You know, on the whole, medical licensing boards are basically they are impotent organizations that don't do anything in many, many ways with doctors. I mean, you look at what they do, and they do a minimal of things in many, many states. Unless you're actually engaging in such aberrant activity as the law would come after you, they often don't do very much at all. I mean, that's been my experience with them. And they should go after anti-immunization doctors. That's what I think. And I think the time has come for us to say, what are you doing and what are you talking about? Once again, freedom of speech, you can talk about it. But as a physician, you've got to look at whether or not you're putting your license at risk.
1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. 800-462-7413. And back to the phones we go, Zorba, with a listener in Lafayette, Indiana. Hi.
Hello there. It's great to be with you today.
Great to have you. How can we help?
Well, I've heard Dr. Zorba speak many times about fad foods and fad diets. Well, I've had a question about one such common or now current fad, that's sea salt. Sea salt is selling for outrageous prices and even comes in different colors and from different nations from all over the world. Pink Hawaiian salt. My question is, what makes sea salt so special? I've come up with two different possible answers.
Sure. Give them to us. What are the answers? Okay. I'd love to hear.
One, is it the dehydrated dead fish that's in it? Or is it the dehydrated body waste from fish and sea mammals, like whales and dolphins, which would certainly add content? But I don't know about its effect on nutrition or even taste.
I don't think it's either of those two things. It could be that, but I rather doubt it. I think it's the trace minerals that happen to be in the ocean and in the area that they're in. Because you look at salt water, it tastes salty, but there are other things in the salt water. There are other minerals that are in there. And the fad behind this is that these trace minerals will actually give you a better nutrition because you may have a little magnesium in one area, a little extra calcium in another area, a little extra this, a little extra that. And you know, for the most part, the taste of salt is salt. Salt we taste with our tongue. Sodium chloride hits the tongue, and the tongue tastes salt, sweet, sour, and bitter. So all the other things that we may think we taste on our tongue, we actually taste in the back of our mouth with our nose. And people believe they can tell the difference between one and the other, but a lot of that has to do with the crystalline formation. So if you have refined Morton salt, it tastes on our tongue differently because the texture is different and the way it opens up the pores in our mouth is different versus when you have a large crystal. Because when you get sea salt, it comes in a shaker and you got to kind of grind it a little bit so it makes it a louder, you know, a larger thing. The other aspect is color. You know, when we look at food, if it looks beige and gray, we don't like the way it looks, and we tend not to eat it. If it looks like slop, we're not going to touch it, even if it tastes good. In fact, we have these names for it that we just don't like. So we want food to be visually beautiful. When you go to a restaurant and a plate served to you, you like the way it looks. So people like to take the pink salt, say, I've got the Himalayan pink salt. Look how good it tastes. But I would bet dollars to donuts as we used to say when I lived in Nova Scotia, dollars to donuts, that you can't tell the difference between pink Himalayan salt and, we'll say, Morton's kosher salt that also you got to put through a little grinder, that you can't tell the difference in a taste test. What kind of salt do you use?
I used kosher salt.
Kosher salt. That's it. Why do you use that versus Morton's salt? Do you like the way it tastes better?
Well, I tell you, I use very, very little salt. Mm-hmm. And with kosher salt, I actually stick my finger down in my salt, and what little sticks to it is most I'll add to any meal.
Mm-hmm. And that actually, that is a pinch of salt. And you're doing it the right way because you're putting it on top of your food. And what happens, these larger crystals make a brighter impression to our brain and signal the food as saltier than the refined crystals. So using kosher salt, which is chunky, turns out to be a way to use less salt in your diet. So I want to commend you on what you're doing. And I think you should patent it, put it out and trademark it and make a lot of money as the new fad.
All right.
Thanks for sharing that with us.
Thank you for your opinion. It was my pleasure.
You take care now.
Yeah. And before we take a break, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. No, it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
It's clear. I'm going to stay with the talk and not with the song. Although when I was 8 and I was 10, I know it's hard to believe, Tom, but I used to have a high voice. You know, I'm a baritone now. But I used to have a high voice. I was a high soprano. Yeah. So they would put me next to the girls, like in 7th or 8th grade singing. I hated it. Little did I realize that when puberty struck, I could have made friends with all those girls at the time. And that would have paid off in spades.
So,
but it said I was embarrassed by my voice.
Could you carry a tune then?
Oh, I could carry a tune. Yeah. Oh, yeah. High tune.
Anyway, the Grammar Police is where we are. Yeah. Actually, it's the Music Police this time.
Oh, gosh, I didn't even know that.
And Zorba,
holy cow.
This isn't the first time you've been nailed by the Music Police. Remember the recent Bob Marley versus Bob McFerrin case?
Yes.
Okay. Well, a listener named Roberta in Corpus Christi, Texas, sent us the following email. Dear Zorba, on today's show, I heard you attempt to sing Aretha Franklin's hit song, Chain of Fools.
Oh, yes, right.
However, you sang the words shame, shame, shame instead of chain, chain, chain. Perhaps your secret disco-loving past was rearing its glittery head, and you were confusing it with the one-hit wonder disco track, Shame, 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 by Shirley and Company.
Oh, I bet that was.
Whatever the case may be, we all make mistakes, and I hope you own up to this one. And please say hi to Tom for me. I love the show. Okay, Brad, can you play that song for us? Didn't you forget something?
I always forget something.
Please say hi to Tom for me.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Tom.
There.
Hi,
there.
Tom.
Was that hard? How hard was that? Did Zorba get himself in trouble again with the Music Police? Send us a note on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, a delicious recipe to share, all right here on Zorba Pester on Your Health. From PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, if you have a question for Zorba, 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, savory bean and spinach soup.
You like soup?
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't an enthusiastic yeah.
I mean, well, I think,
how much do you like soup? I don't know. How about in the wintertime?
It's better in the winter.
It's better in the wintertime. I think soup obviously is more common in the wintertime than in the summertime.
Yeah.
What kind of soup do you like?
Pretty much. See, savory bean and spinach
doesn't seem interesting.
Doesn't have any meat in it.
Doesn't have any meat.
I like soup with some meat in it.
You mean we call that stew? Like stew?
No.
Chicken noodle soup because there's a little chicken in it. So if you made the savory bean and spinach soup and you threw some like beef in it, that would be okay.
I'd rather have a little chicken.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this doesn't have chicken. I'm sorry. It has bean and spinach. This is a vegetarian soup.
What do you do?
Soup.
Come into my house and arrest me.
That's
if
it.
I, rest if I put
you.
Meat
That's
in
right.
It.
That's right. You know what we're going to do? The vegetarian police. They're a whole other group. We have the grammar police. We've got the music police. We don't have the vegetarian police. And we don't have the side group like the Marines or the vegetarian police, the vegan police.
Yeah.
And we don't have the vegan gluten free police that could even go over because this recipe is vegan and gluten free. So the vegan police would say, this is great. You know, I mean, obviously I'm not hitting anything. All right, let's get on with
this. All right, let's go.
Okay. Now, one of the things about this recipe is it's simple.
Yep.
Do you like simple recipes?
Simple is good.
See, very good. Simple is good. I like it. So we're gonna do cans of things. Cans.
Okay.
Cans of things.
I get it.
You know, and cans, by the way, I don't know if you read, I read the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, but I don't know, but people are eating canned vegetables much, much less than they used to. Did you know that?
No, I believe it, though.
Yeah. You know, when you were a kid, didn't your mother open up like a can of green beans?
Yeah.
I'm serious, when you would have something
No, actually, she didn't cook a lot, but I never had canned green beans.
What did you have?
Hey, fresh green beans.
Well, what if it wasn't fresh? What'd
you
have?
You go to the store and they have green beans.
Well, my mother opened up a can of green beans.
Okay,
and
right.
We didn't have frozen vegetables because Mr. Birdseye, that was his name, had just invented frozen veggies, and they weren't around a lot, and they were more expensive.
Unfortunately, we're out of time for the recipe,
okay.
So we have to go back to the...
Okay. 3 14-ounce cans of veggie broth, or its equivalent, better than bouillon broth, by the way, is my favorite broth, and their veggie broth is great. So if you don't want to use 3 14-ounce cans of veggie broth, you then want to do the equivalent in better than bouillon vegetable broth, or they're better than bouillon mushroom broth, or a combination. Of both.
Okay, 3 14-ounce cans of vegetable broth,
or what
Zorba was just saying. Yeah.
1 15-ounce can of tomato puree.
A 15-ounce can of tomato puree.
15-ounce can of white beans. I would use cannelloni beans, and when you put the beans in, wash them, put them in a colander first, and wash the water off of that because the beans will taste a little, they'll firm up a little bit more.
Yeah, 15-ounce can of white beans.
Half a cup of cooked white rice.
Half a cup cooked white rice. Rice.
Half a cup finely chopped onion.
Half a cup finely chopped onion.
I like the way you're saying this, by the way. It's really staccato.
I'm learning from you after all these years.
Let's try this. 2 cloves of garlic mince. Let's say I do that.
2 cloves of garlic mince.
I like the way you did it before. A teaspoon of dry basil.
A little tea dry basil.
That's right. 1/4 teaspoon of salt.
1/4 little tea salt.
1/4 teaspoon black pepper.
1/4 little tea, black pepper.
And about 8 cups of spinach, coarsely chopped.
Eight cups of spinach, coarsely chopped.
And you could use fresh. You could use frozen in this, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you're going to do some Parmesan cheese. So in a 3.5 or 4-quart slow cooker, combine the broth, tomato puree, beans, rice, onion, garlic, basil, salt, and pepper. Cover and cook under a low setting. 5 to 8 hours. You could actually do this on the stove and not cook it as long because everything is pre-cooked, but you could throw this in the morning. Stir the spinach in at the very end so it's not cooking nearly as much and serve it with some Parmesan cheese. You've got a nice little recipe. What's nice about this is you can set it up in the morning before you go to work mm-hmm. and have it in the evening when you come home from work. And we've had slow cooker recipes on the show before. We've actually had some cooks. I'm going to ask Carl to get a cook with a slow cooker cookbook. Carl, we've had some slow cooker cookbooks before, and I think we've had one or two chefs on for slow cooking.
I think you're right on that.
I think we're going to do that again because I think this is good. It's the time of year we really should think of slow cooking. It's mm-hmm. the beginning of that time of year, at least in my brain. So, wonderful recipe. If you'd like a copy of this, go to our website, zorbapastor.org, or find us on Facebook. Find us on Facebook if you want to.
800-462-7413.
You know, when you laugh at your own jokes and think they're funny, there must be something wrong inside your brain.
Well, that was funny. I was laughing, too. Laughing on the inside. 800-462-7413. To the phones now. Are you ready for a call?
Yes, I'm ready for a call. I'm thinking about my joke.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm ready for a call.
Okay. Yes. Let's get to the phones. And a listener with us in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
So I have a question kind of related to digestive issues or digestion question about lectins, prebiotics, and probiotics and what your thought and takes are on that.
In terms of what?
In terms of either bloating, digestion, just dietary issues that relate to the gut. You hear a lot about leaky gut. You hear a lot about digestive changes as we get older.
Uh-huh. Do you have any gut problems?
No, I would have to unfortunately say in my 30s, I've noticed bloating that I've never had before.
Mm-hmm.
So I've looked into and started taking some probiotics, but uh-huh. then read the importance of prebiotics in addition to the probiotics.
Mm-hmm. So prebiotics, what are you taking in terms of prebiotics?
Well, I haven't yet. I'm trying to do as much as I can with my diet versus uh-huh. taking a supplement.
Excellent.
But that was kind of a question for you. Is that a better route to go?
Oh, absolutely. You hit route number one. Are there certain foods that are actually doing it? So, for instance, you ate a lot of beans and you'd say, gee, I'm bloating and I have a lot of gas. Well, obviously, it would be due to the beans. I mean, we know that.
Sure.
We know beans cause gas. The issue with digestive issues, there may be a food or a class of food that bothers you. So lactose intolerance is very common in society, and we eat a lot of milk and dairy products, cheese and yogurt. It's, you know, resplendent within our society. And so quite often when there's bloating, the first thing I tell people is, let's look at dairy products. Look at the enzyme lactate, which is a generic now, which is an enzyme that goes into the stomach if you want to eat dairy products. A lot of people have to take that. Some people can tolerate yogurt. They can't tolerate ice cream. They can tolerate butter, but they can't tolerate milk and so on. And so what you want to do is look at food that may be causing bloating, and the foods mm-hmm. are, and going through one after another. Now, there's a very interesting diet for irritable bowel syndrome called the FODMAP diet, FODMAP. And it's really come to vogue, medical vogue, over the last, I would say, 5 or 6 years. And it looks at fermenting disaccharides and polysaccharides that are in our gut. So it doesn't look specifically at bacteria. We know that bacteria have lots of issues that we don't understand in our gut. But I think the FODMAP diet is far more important than prebiotics and probiotics. And it's a different way of eating that sometimes people do forever, and sometimes people do for a week, and sometimes people do for a month. And it may change the bacteria flora within your gut. And it's not a supplement, but it changes sort of, if you will, what's going on within the gases and liquids within the gut. And I would, if you're bloating and having issues, I would go to the FODMAP diet for 2 to 4 weeks.
Okay.
That's what I would do. I wouldn't spend my money on probiotics. Now, the most common probiotic you can get, easily, cheap, and expensive, is called yogurt. Yogurt is lactobacillus. And lactobacillus capsules are good. If you're looking for the right probiotic, then what you want to do is either pay money and go to consumerlab.com because they test probiotics. And if you're going to use one, I tell people it's a pig in a poke. You don't know what you're getting unless you go to consumerlab.com or if you buy a name brand of a company you trust, Costco, mm-hmm. CVS, Walgreens, Walmart. These are large organizations. They don't want their name sullied. And so if they label it as their probiotic, not if they sell it, but if they go, this is a Costco probiotic, that means they've tested it, and that's what I depend on. The label and the cost of the probiotic has nothing to do with whether or not it's good. If you go to consumerlab.com, you got to pay money, like Consumer Reports, you will find out that a lot of expensive supplements don't have much in them, like fish oil. There's supplements, some supplements that cost a lot of money, and the fish oil that's in them actually is rancid, according to their tests. They're an independent lab. They're pay-as-you-go, and that's why they cost money. There's no advertising.
Okay.
So, but go to food. Go to the FODMAP diet. That's what I would do. Okay. I'd go to FODMAP. It's very effective for a lot of people. It's not a lifetime diet, although you read some stuff and say, I've been on this for life and I feel good. A lot of people just do it for a month or two, and they change their gut, and then they can go back to their usual eating habits. And then check out lactose. Anything with milk in it, that's the first thing to check out. See if you're lactose intolerant.
Okay.
Perfect.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You take care. Thanks for calling.
Appreciate the call at 800-462-7413.
You know, we're all looking for the quick fix, or we're looking for a fix, or we're looking for a tablet, or we're looking for a pill, because we're so pill-oriented within our society, and we're looking for a package, and we're looking for a package that says this will work. When in reality, some things take changes in food and in diet, and that's so much more complex and so much harder to figure out. Mm-hmm. And it's not a quick fix when it comes to food. It is a slow fix, because everything changes very slowly. But Mother Nature is always the answer and the talisman we should go back to, and forget the industrialized products, whether they're natural, organic, or made by a huge multinational corporation that's invested in the dark spaces in our government.
800-462-7413. If you have a question for Zorba. Before the break, now, Zorba, let's fire up our newest segment on the show, where you, Zorba, a real-life doctor, clarify something a listener has read on the Internet. We're calling it Google Doc.
I got to tell you something. Brad got us these new chairs, and when I listen to music like that, the first thing I do, I'm in the chair, moving back and forth. We're going to do the picture, little video, put it on our website. These chairs are awesome. I can go back and forth in the office. I can dance in these chairs, and I'll tell you, Google Doc, that is music that sings to my heart.
Yeah, well, Brad Kohlberg is great, but this is not his best moment, I think, giving us these new chairs.
I think it is his best moment.
How long have we been doing this show? 25 years?
No, 50 years. We've been doing it for 50 years.
We have
not. I'm forgetting.
But all that time, I had this chair.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
And I got a new chair. It's cool. Aren't you excited?
I'm an old guy, Zorba.
You want your old chair back?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, Tom.
I'm not
oh my
used
gosh.
To new
Come
things.
Why don't you go back to the 1950s and have one of those
old
gas-guzzling cars?
Better padding. And it didn't wheel all over the place like this anyway.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I bet you'd like to go back to landlines and not even have cell phones.
I've got one of those landlines.
Hey, actually, guys, we have a song for these new chairs.
Oh, we do. I got it. I love it. You know what? It goes with the chair. Thank you, Brad, and thanks for the song that goes with the chair.
I'll agree that it goes with the chair. The following email came to us from a listener named Kate. She writes, Dr. Zorba, glucosamine was recently suggested to a caller who suffered from plantar fasciitis. I have the same condition, and I'm hoping to find some relief. I want to purchase some and found two options, glucosamine sulfate and glucosamine with chondroitin. I searched the web and found glucosamine with chondroitin is not as effective as taking one or the other. Please advise, and thanks so much. Your program is wonderful.
Oh, how nice they said the program is wonderful.
Well, it is.
They're sweet. Yeah, it is wonderful. That's it. Well, first of all, for plantar fasciitis, the most important thing is do not walk barefoot in your house. Mm-hmm. And do not walk with house slippers because basically they have no support in your foot. So therefore, you got to wear something on. You got to wear shoes around the house. That's mm-hmm. really important, or something with support. Now, glucosamine or glucosamine with chondroitin sulfate, same thing. There's one is not more effective than the other. So it may work, may not work. Some scientific studies have shown it may be useful if you buy the right brand. Mm. Buying the right brand means do not pay attention to the label. Go to consumerlab.com. They test glucosamine and glucosamine sulfate. Buy one that's there. Buy one with a store brand where you trust the store, because otherwise you may not be getting the stuff. Try it for 6 weeks. See if it works for you.
Did you read something online that you're not quite sure about? Zorba's here to clarify the clickbait. Just post
clickbait,
on our Facebook page.
That's right. yeah, that is clickbait.
See, I
know
a little
you
bit.
You are with the times. You know what I want? I want a hat. I want a Google Doc hat. That's what I need. I mean, if I'm going to answer these questions, it's kind of like Johnny Carson, you know, when he wore that hat when he was, you know, doing his whatever, you know, that humorous hat. Remember?
What did you call that?
I don't remember.
A listener will let us know.
Yeah, I'm
Karnak.
Sorry.
Thank you, Carl.
Karnak. Johnny Carson with the great Karnak. I want the Google Doc hat. It's got to have a G in it. Maybe somebody will make a Google Doc hat for me while I answer these questions, because I've got to put my thinking cap on so I can actually answer them.
How did Carl know the answer to that?
I don't know. He wasn't even a thought in his parents' eyes when Johnny Carson was around.
You can send us an email at
WPR.org, or don't forget you can find us on Facebook.
Done for the week?
I don't think we are.
No.
We're getting on with other stuff.
More of your calls are coming up. Another topic to talk about. We'll all be quacking up right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, turning vacant lots into green spaces.
Yes, really, really interesting.
Can improve mental health?
Yeah, a very, very interesting sort of concept. Article from JAMA Network Open that looked at stuff that's going on in Philadelphia. And before I talk about the article, I had a trainer years ago. He was a hockey player. I talk about him a lot. And, you know, I said, why do you guys get dressed up in suits and ties before you go out there and bang each other up? Hockey is a contact sport. Mm-hmm. And he said, look good, feel good, play good. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea that when you look good, you're actually going to feel good and you're going to do more. And this really is along that line. And so this was a particular urban project in Philadelphia. They looked at about a little over 500 vacant lots in Philadelphia. And they showed signs of urban blight, illegal dumping, abandoned cars, overgrowth vegetation. You can mm-hmm. just picture it in your mind of what these things look like. They interviewed adults living with them. They asked them about a bunch of things. What do you think about life? Are you depressed? Are you happy? Feelings of worth and well-worth. They did psychological feelings with them. And then they took a number of lots in areas and they fixed them up. So in other words, they took a series of lots in different urban areas, not all of them, of the city, and they cleaned up those lots. They got rid of the dumping. They planted some trees. They made the lot look better. Mm-hmm. So they took an empty urban lot and made it into a green space, okay? Not quite a park where you have to keep it up, but made it into a green space. And a year and a half after doing that, they interviewed people again. And that once again, these are the same interviews you would do saying, not just how you're feeling, but mm-hmm. you're depressed and so on. And they found, lo and behold, there was a 40% drop in depressive feelings and a 50% drop in a feeling of worthlessness. You know, you're in the inner city and you feel like you don't have much worth.
Makes perfect sense.
Makes perfect sense. And so this is really a very interesting issue. So if you look at a lot of states in the country, you know, a lot of departments of transportation cut back on their funding, and you see areas around highways that are then taken care of. They'll say this highway is taken care of by Tom Clark International, and people go and pick up the garbage around there. But it's picking up garbage around your area, making your area look better. And it reminds me that there are things that we can do in a community, in our own community, if we've got an urban spot that is a blight, and fixing that up and making it look nicer will help our neighbors, will help ourselves, will help our children, will help our society. And it's something we should be doing, and especially in areas that are poorer, that have more urban blight. And very interesting thing. So it shows me, when I wrote my book on longevity, I said there are five spheres of wellness: physical, mental, family, and social; spiritual, material. Where you live is your material space. Make it look better. Look good, feel good, live well.
1-800-462-7413. And a listener with us now, Zorba, in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Zorba. This is Pani from Waukesha. I'm a huge fan of your show, and I like your humor even better.
Thank you. How can we help? How can we help you?
So I'm today talking to you about a problem with my eye tears. As strange as it sounds, in the last 24 months, I have been experiencing some tearing in my eyes. I have tears rolling off, and you know, I've tried a bunch of things, which is like, you know, when I get a, here's the symptoms, right? When I use like a wall drill and so on, my tears tend to be a little bit more stable, like I don't tear as much. But normally if I don't, then I start tearing, and it doesn't matter what season I'm in, where I am in, which location, I always see this. And I went to an ophthalmologist. I got myself tested. I wear glasses. I wear glasses, so I work on a computer. So I got myself tested. I got myself, there's a tear test they do. So I got that as well, but I'm still not able to crack this.
So so you went to an ophthalmologist. Did they look at the tear duct in your eyes, where the tear duct goes out of the corner of your eye into your nose? Did they look at that? Did you tell them specifically about this? Did they say you were making too many tears, or the tears weren't going out?
Yes, so I did tell them that, and they did examine that part as well. And, you know, nothing seems to have helped. And one person, in fact, suggested, hey, it's not about using, you know, any of these Benadryl, Waldrils. That's not the problem. You should not be using it. So I was kind of in a fix what to do.
Well, I have a couple of suggestions on things that may work. There's some very easy remedies that often work for people who either have too many tears or too few tears. And that is warm compresses, and I'll tell you how to do that, with lubricating tears, which do not have any medication in them. Like Visine has a medication within it that often will actually dry up the eyes, and often that actually can be a problem. And you don't want to use that. So the first thing you want to do is get a bottle of teardrop. Restasis is the one I like, R-E-S-T-A-S-I-S. It has glycerin in it, if I remember correctly, and other things. It does not have a decongestant. And there's, you can also get a generic of Restasis. And what you do is you then also go and in a drugstore or on Amazon or other places, you get compresses that you put in the microwave for 30 seconds, and they're warm. They're not moist, but they're warm, and you use them. A warm, moist compress with a washcloth makes your face wet, and we tend not to use them very much. And what you do is two things that you do for sure. The morning when you get up and night when you go to sleep, you put the drops in your eyes, and you put this, doesn't have to be the moment you go to sleep, for you put the drops in your eyes, close your eyes for 2 minutes, put this warm compress, as they say you buy them, they're little beads, and you put them in the microwave for 30 minutes in a mask, and you keep it over your eyes, very important, for 2 minutes. 2 minutes when your eyes are closed to me seems like an hour. So I will set my iPhone timer, and I'll say, Siri, set the timer for 3 minutes, because by the time I put the drop in the eye and everything, 30 seconds has gone by, and I make sure that I really keep it there for 2 minutes, morning and evening. And then during the day, Because when you sit in front of a computer, you do not blink as much, and you're causing irritation to your eye. Nobody does. During the day, keep little eye drops with you. And whenever you remember it, at least once every hour or two, put these eye drops, Restasis or another eye drop, but Restasis is the best, in your eye. Keep your eye closed for at least 20 or 30 seconds, and you will moisturize your eye, and that might get rid of the tears. It may seem counterintuitive that you're putting a liquid in there, but there are lots of tear ducts in the eyes that may be overworking because your eyes are too dry because you're looking in front of a computer. And it's the warm compressed a minimum of twice a day that makes a difference. Some people actually do it three or four times a day. And you can warm these things under hot water also. But buy the mask. Amazon.com, Walgreens, Walmart, all the places have them. Do the compresses at least twice a day, and this will probably fix the problem, especially as long as the eye doctor looked and said, no, the duct looks okay. If not, the next step is the duct. And what they do is there's another test where they actually look into the duct, or they put, it's not a wire, but they put something down the duct to make sure the duct in the corner of the eye, the gutter of your eye, is actually clear, because that's the other issue.
Got it.
Okay. Good luck.
So I'll try this.
Yeah. And keep doing it. Really does make a difference. It'll take you about 4 to 6 weeks to see a result. It won't be overnight. It takes 4 to 6 weeks before that. The moisture makes a difference. We have lots of little tear glands in our eyes, not just big ones. So good luck. Do let us know what goes on, please.
We appreciate the call at 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, time again now to slog through the murky waters of medical quackery. Let's fire up another segment of Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
By the way, Tom, before you go on, people go to our website. They can listen to all the jingles that we have, the Quacking Up, the Grammar Police, the Google Doc. They're all sitting there on the website, ZorbaPastor.org. Anyone who wants to listen, I love them. I listen to these all the time.
I can't imagine somebody actually going to the website to hear our jingles.
Yeah, but you don't even have a smartphone, so it's hard for you to imagine anything.
Moving right along, tell us, if you will, about Charles Romley Alder Wright and his quest to create a new version of morphine without the additive qualities.
That's right. He actually developed a product that would get rid of morphine addiction, and he found the product was dynamite. The people who were on morphine would take this product over morphine any day, and this product cured morphine addiction. And the product was, heroin. Heroin. So heroin was the cure for morphine addiction, and he was exactly correct. Bayer Pharmaceuticals then took it over as a cure for morphine addiction, and they patented it, and they trademarked it, and they called it the greatest cough suppressant known to man. Take a teaspoon of heroin, and you will not cough anymore, which is true. It probably, I mean, I've never tried it, but it probably is a great cough suppressant. It has some side effects in there, but great cough suppressant in there, you know. But this is wonderful. The idea was that heroin was non-addictive. They actually said it was non-addictive, and they also said it's a pain reliever that will replace morphine. And never idea that this was absolutely wonderful. And in about 1900, when they did it, they claimed it could treat tuberculosis, asthma, colds, coughs. Ads gave evanescent. One of the ads said, heroin clears the complexion, gives a buoyance to the mind, regulates the stomach and the bowels, and is, in fact, the perfect guardian of health.
Whoa.
Talk about quackery. I think this is the king of quackery when you look at that. So you know what this reminds you? Don't believe everything you hear.
Yeah. that's I wonder how long that lasted before it got shut down.
Well, I'll tell you something. It lasted for a long time. It lasted basically until around the 1910, 1912. There was an international convention about opium addiction. It was a big issue in China, of course, becoming a big issue in Europe. Bayer stopped heroin production in 1913. So they did it for almost 20 years. And then in 1914, the U.S. government followed with the Harrison Narcotics Act. where they outlawed heroin and cocaine. So in other words, it took them 20 years.
Whoa.
The real question is, how much money did Bayer Pharmaceutical Company made in that 20 years? And they were producing heroin and labeling as the greatest cough suppressant known to man and the cure for opium addiction and morphine addiction. You know what? It is the cure for opium and morphine addiction.
Trading addictions. Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to this segment? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Before we head out now, Zorba, we love it when our listeners post on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. So it's time for another round of Facebook feedback.
Facebook feedback.
Okay, first, Linda in Oshkosh, Wisconsin writes, Zorba, will my nail bed come back after a wound that damaged it? I cannot seem to grow a decent nail. Ugh.
Well, it's very difficult. Sometimes nail beds are destroyed and they will not come back. There's not much you can do about it. I mean, that's what we do when we, with people with recurrent ingrown toenails, if they get bad enough, we actually destroy it with something, with a, something called carbolic acid that removes the nail bed. And sometimes trauma will do that. So the answer is it might come back and it might not, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Next, Lee in Milwaukee writes, Zorba, when talking to a caller, you were recommending he try the protein shake Glucerna. It is an okay supplement, but it doesn't replace the pleasure of enjoying a good meal.
Oh, absolutely. That is absolutely the case. But it's for people who basically don't get a good meal, don't want to make food in the morning. It's also a boost in between if people just don't have the appetite. But they're right. On the other hand, Tom, you, for many years, you would have Carnation Instant Breakfast in milk when you did the morning show in the morning.
Yeah, I did. That's right.
And Glucerna, as a good example, has less carbohydrates than that. And it's worthwhile. And that's what you did to get yourself going in the morning. You didn't feel like having, you know, a big meal.
Yeah, it
so worked
really well
works
for me.
Really well.
Yeah. Finally, Zorba, Tom in Wisconsin shared a little joke with us. How many grammar police does it take to change a light bulb?
A light bulb, okay.
Yeah, the answer is two. T-O-O. So I don't think that's really a grammar joke. I think that's a spelling joke.
Well, we'll keep it in the grammar police parlance because you know what? They've got subgroups. They've got the punctuation police. They've got, you know, the spelling police. You know, they're all, in the end, they're grammar police.
I don't accept that at all. Grammar is grammar is grammar. I don't think we need a spelling police for a radio program.
Well, right? I don't know. I mean, that's why I've got Word, because it has a spell checker. Before you know it, the spelling police were, oh, spelling police for a radio show.
Yeah.
Well, we've got a website, Tom. Come on. We got a website.
Let's keep the Facebook love coming. You can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or Facebook.
We'll see you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast,
visit us on the web at zorbapastor.org or through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime.
800. Hey, I don't know that number. 462-7413.
What?
1-800-462-7413.
That's very good.
God, it's in my mind.
Zorba.
Holy cow.
Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do a check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping that you'll be with us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
For more Zorba Pastor on Your Health, including episodes, recipes, and tips mentioned on the program, visit ZorbaPastor.org. This year, we're celebrating the show's 25th anniversary, and we want to hear from you. How has Zorba helped you out? What have you learned from the show over the years? Leave us a message at 800-462-7413.